The following is a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
Welcome to Cartoon Fun. It's Cartoonerific. Yeah!
It's Cartoonerific.
Well, welcome to another Cartoonerific podcast, Classic Animated Cartoons. I am Brian Mitchell, and I am your host. Over the years, especially when I was a young man, young boy in Brooklyn, had access to all these cartoons. And if you've been listening to these podcasts, you know, we've talked about them, you know, of course, the Warner Brothers cartoons and a lot of Terrytoon product that was on the air in local stations in New York. One of those cartoons that I used to see all the time was Popeye. And I absolutely loved the character of Popeye. And it was this underdog kind of character that, you know, he ate his spinach and he kind of came alive and he beat the living daylights out of his good old pal Brutus or Bluto. So it was a fun cartoon. I really enjoyed it as a kid. And there were so many of these Popeye cartoons. I mean, they produced them in the 30s and the 40s and 50s. It was Fleischer first, Famous Studios, and then later everybody kind of jumped on board making Popeye cartoons. And that was very interesting. And I used to watch them and go like, well, it's kind of weird because, you know, you'd see them, they'd be all lavish and moving all over the place. And then you would see them in color. And then you would see them kind of cut back on the animation a bit, and it kind of looked a little bit bare bones. But I still enjoyed them, and I still enjoy them today. They're still kind of fun to watch. Well, we're going to be talking all about Popeye today. And you know, in New York, the Popeye cartoons were on a station. It was WPIX Channel 11. And that station, they had, I believe he was a station manager, Jack McCarthy. And I know somebody's going to correct me because people just love to correct me all the time. And that's fine because I want to get the record straight. But he used to host the Popeye show in New York for many years. And he would come on as Captain Jack McCarthy. And in between the cartoons, he would talk about sailing. You'd be talking about Montauk, New York, you know, which is out there by the Hamptons. And I used to actually like listening to him because he was a very interesting gentleman. But anyway, he would say a few things, get right to the cartoons. And then if he had a couple minutes left over, he might start talking about the beautiful shore of Montauk, Long Island, New York. But anyway, that's how I grew up on those cartoons. And I really enjoyed them. And, you know, maybe about 10, 15 years ago, I was made aware of this gentleman who is the Popeye connoisseur. He's the one who really loves Popeye, has been championing these cartoons for many years. And, you know, because Popeye is kind of a violent cartoon and, you know, come on, Tom and Jerry's a violent cartoon. The Roadrunner's a violent cartoon. But they're, you know, it's not real. It's cartoon. But, you know, people have been trying to sanitize the airwaves for years for kids. And somehow Popeye has kind of faded out. But he was really a big rating star back in the 50s and 60s when he was on television and the 70s. You know, people couldn't get enough. Kids couldn't get enough of Popeye. So today we're going to be talking with Mr. Fred Graninetti, and Fred is Popeye's champion. He's basically out there making sure that these cartoons are being seen. He has a new book coming out, and we're going to talk to him about that. So please stay tuned. Don't go away.
Cartoonerific is the place to be to celebrate hand-drawn animated cartoons. The Cartoonerific podcast features interviews with the magic makers behind your favorite animated cartoons, with episodes uploaded every Friday. or visit the Cartoonerific blog featuring articles about classic cartoon animation. At the Cartoonerific Gallery, view original animation art and memorabilia from your favorite animated films and TV shows. The company store features exclusive swag from the Cartoonerific universe. And coming soon, brand new world premiere cartoons on the Cartoonerific channel. It's all here. Join the fun at www.cartoonerific.com. That's cartoon, E-R-I-F-I-C.com. It's Cartoonerific. Saving the universe one funny cartoon at a time. And now it's time for our special Cartoonerific guest.
Well, we're back. And today is going to be a show all about Popeye. And we have the Grand Poobah, the chief cheerleader that's been out there for years championing this character because the cartoons kind of disappeared for a while. And, I mean, they've been shown on different places, but, you know, I believe Cartoon Network had it and was not running them. And this gentleman has done more for Popeye than anybody on the planet. He is the co-founder of the Popeye Fan Club, has a massive Popeye collection, has 6 books on Popeye that are out, the most recent being Popeye the Sailor Man, the 1960s cartoons. So it's going to be this is an honor and a treat for me because I grew up on those cartoons and really enjoyed them. So here is Mr. Fred Grandinetti. Fred, how are you doing today?
Ahoy there. Ooh, that hurt.
There you go. Yeah, I kind of do that myself. I kind of do the Popeye laugh once in a while. You know?
Oh, that's excellent. I like that.
Well, thank you very much. I've known about you for years. You have a show, Drawing with Fred, that's on
30 years.
Wow. Wow. That's very neat. How'd you get into the Popeye thing? You must be my age, because did you grow up in the 60s? Or
I was born in 1961.
Well, same year. My birthday is December 12th. Are you?
I'm May 1st.
There you go. Well, you're older than me, so congratulations. So you grew up in Massachusetts?
Yes.
Okay, so you must have been, I know here in New York, we used to have Popeye shown on WPIX Channel 11.
Uh-huh.
And that's now, trying to think, I don't think it matters what it is now. I was trying to think if it's, I think it's still a Tribune station here. Not that that matters, but tell me a little bit about your childhood and how you got to really experience Popeye.
Well, my mother's earliest recollection is when I was 3 and getting my tonsils out. Her sister Kay, who loved the color red, got me an olive oil doll by Gund, and she was wearing red. That's my earliest. I do remember about being 4 or 5 trying to learn how to draw Popeye, and I drew like 3 circles, and my father suggested I merge the circles and put a sailor's hat and a pipe on the other end. And I was, you know, buying Popeye stuff at an early age. My mother and father said, you know, I was the easiest person to buy for as a kid. Just go to the local toy store and get anything Popeye and Bozo, and I was a happy little camper. Here in Massachusetts, we watched him on Providence, Rhode Island channel before my brother and I went to school, Popeye and the Three Stooges, and also on Rex Traylor's Boomtown. He ran Popeye, the theatricals and the King Features cartoons on Saturday mornings. But I mainly remember watching him every afternoon on the Uncle Gus Show, which was on WMUR, Channel 9 in New Hampshire.
Oh, there you go. So, Popeye, basically, because it was produced by Fleischer at one point during the 30s, right? Mm-hmm. And then Fleischer went out of business, and then basically Paramount had been distributing the Popeye cartoons. They were producing them, but it was Fleischer, and then they took over the Fleischer studio, brought it back.
Yeah, Famous Studios.
It became Famous Studios. And then that was the second incarnation of Popeye. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the look totally changed. I guess they're going after
the look, that. Actually, it was kind of like a gradual change. You have to remember the Fleischers were the first ones to put him in that white sailor suit along with Bluto. That wasn't Famous Studios. Fleischer did that
right.
to go along with World War II. And I think Famous just carried on that tradition, mainly because they wanted a more modern look and get away from the urban feel. And also, it was probably much easier to animate a white mask rather than a red, black, and blue mask. And the same thing with Bluto.
Right. And then somewhere they kind of concluded doing Popeyes for theatricals, and then I guess
the rebirth happened.
The rebirth of Popeye happened, where it was King Features was actually producing them.
Well, actually, the rebirth happened when the theatricals premiered on television in September of 1956. I don't think anyone expected how big Popeye became. I mean, he was a tremendous success on television, to the point where he kind of regenerated the whole uncle hosted show, where you had Captain Bob, Cowboy Dick, you know, Freddie the Fireman, all across the United States. You
right.
had a live host hosting these Popeye cartoons, which just drew tremendous ratings, and Popeye was reintroduced to children all over again, and it was just a massive success. And also in terms of licensing, I mean, you know, hundreds and thousands of items came out during that short time after Popeye debuted on television.
Right. And then, yeah, you know, there were a lot of things that happened around that time when a lot of things made it to TV, like Three Stooges, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Where Mo Larry and, well, Curly was gone and Shemp was gone, but they realized when Columbia dropped them and then they dumped these things onto TV. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, what was old was new again.
New again, right? Exactly. And, yeah, the same thing happened with Popeye.
Yep. Yeah, and a lot of people there were people that never saw the Three Stooges. Like I, mm-hmm. you know, I grew up on the Three Stooges, and all those shows were basically all those 20-minute comedies were done. They were done years ago. But
and that's
to me,
why
it was
many
all
independent stations combined Popeye and the Three Stooges, because the two of them were such big ratings grabbers individually, mm-hmm. that they said, hey, let's combine these two. And stations across the country had their own Popeyes and Three Stooges show.
Let's go back a little bit in history, because I just want to talk about Seeger was the comic strip creator of Popeye,
right.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
So this was a popular strip in comics.
It was moderately successful when he created it in 1919, and it starred Olive Oil, her original boyfriend, Ham Gravy, and her brother, Castor Oil. You know, it was okay,
right.
But then when Seeger introduced Popeye on January 17th, 1929, who, by the way, was only supposed to be in one story, that was it. He was supposed to be there and gone,
right.
but he became such a hit with the newspaper reading public that he had to put him back.
When did Fleischer get a hold of it? And
1933.
Now, did they make the deal for Popeye, or was it somebody
Fleischer,
else?
Max Fleischer said, I think he said it in the Fleischer story, an excellent book, by the way, where
that
he
was,
said he always loved the Thimble Theater,
right,
and the comic strip,
mm-hmm.
and that's why Max Fleischer negotiated with King Features to use Popeye in a Betty Boop cartoon.
That was that book was by Leslie Carbaga, right?
Yes, fantastic book.
Yes. So that kind of, you know.
And he was actually the first one to write about the Fleischers and Popeye and Betty Boop to be taken seriously. You know, prior to that, it was Disney and Warner Brothers up the yin-yang, so I give him a lot of credit, and I thank him tremendously because he inspired me to write my own material on Popeye.
That's terrific. No, he. I think Disney was always the kind of the darling because it was always the art of animation. Warner Brothers mm-hmm. took a while. Mm-hmm. I think all the other studios took a while. It wasn't until the 70s where you had fan publications like Funny. I think it was Funny World, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was one like
Animato,
that.
Yeah.
Animato, which was a fanzine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mind Rot, I think, was another one. These were all in the 70s, and a lot of the people that came out who were actually writing for these things was like Jerry Beck and Jim Corcus, and I can't
I can't think of some of the other people, but it just kind of gives you an idea. All these people kind of, they were starting these fanzines, and then basically they kind of, they veered off, and they had these, you know, they were historians or people that are just celebrating animation. So, but yeah, the Leslie Carbaga book, which I think that came out, did it come out in the 70s or the early
80s? I believe it was 76, around that time.
Yeah, exactly. So when Fleischer picked it up, and they produced the first cartoon, the first Popeye cartoon, was it an instant hit, or?
Yeah, well, basically what they did, just to you know, make sure that they were going to be getting somebody who could carry his own series, they tested him out in the Betty Boop cartoon. It was a Betty Boop cartoon called Popeye the Sailor. Betty Boop had a very small part as a hula dancer. You know, it was the traditional Popeye, Bluto, and olive oil. You know, Bluto grabs olive oil scenario. But the cartoon with Betty Boop was a tremendous hit, and within 3 months he had his own series. And Popeye remained, even through the famous studio years, and a lot of people don't know this, became Paramount's number one short subject series, even through those later famous studio cartoons. Popeye was number one. Casper was number two.
Casper came around, what, 1940, do you know? 1940?
I think it was 44 or something like that, yeah, when they may have done the first cartoon. Something around that time.
Yeah, I want to say 42 or 44, but, you know, somewhere in there. And
yeah, because a lot of people think because, oh, you know, famous, you know, deviated on the Fleischer formula or the look, that the cartoons weren't making money. That is a total fallacy. They were number one.
Wow. All right. Do you know some of the animators that worked on? I know Myron Waldman ended up directing Casper, but he was one of the animators at the time.
Yeah, he did some Fleischer's. He's also created Pudgy in the Betty Boop series to keep Betty Boop going when they couldn't do the vamp act anymore with her.
Right. That's right.
she needed supporting characters.
That was the dog, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right.
I actually met Myron Waldman several years ago at a cartoon museum in Connecticut. We were kind of on a double bill together. I was drawing Popeye, and he was there showing off his animation cells. We had dinner together. Very, very, very nice gentleman.
Wow. Yeah, I never, you know, it's funny. I lived roughly, I want to say, 7 blocks away from him. And I didn't know it. I didn't know it. We both lived in Wantagh, New York. I don't live in Wantagh.
Hey, that's
anymore.
The same thing with Joe Besser and Curly Joe Derita. They lived very close to each other. Yep. Never met each other.
That's wild. Yeah. There was somebody I went to school with that, you know, went to school in New York with him. And then I moved out to California. And then we hooked up years later after I moved back to New York, and we were just talking. He lived a block away, and I never knew he was there. So really kind of weird. And then, but with Popeye, once they started getting the series going, I mean, Paramount was really happy, and the cartoons were doing extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was I don't want to say there was a clash with Disney, but it was basically kind of a rivalry.
I'm sure there was a rivalry going on, you know, with Disney and Fleischer and Warner's, you know. But I don't think it was at each other's throats. It was the output, you know, whatever the public happened to fancy at that time.
Right. What were the best Popeye cartoons of that era from the 1930s?
In my opinion,
yeah.
I'm gonna tell you, when I was a kid and I used to watch the Fleischers on the Uncle Gus show, whenever Popeye pulled out his can of spinach, I would say, "Hurry up and eat that," because knowing it was a Fleischer cartoon, it'd either get whacked out of his hand and he wouldn't eat it, or somebody else would get it. And it was the unpredictability in a Fleischer cartoon.
Yeah.
One of the classic ones that comes to mind is I Likes Babies and Infants, which I hated as a kid. I've grown to appreciate it as an adult.
Right.
When Popeye and Bluto were spending the cartoon trying to get Sweepy to laugh, and Bluto's pounding on Popeye. He goes to reach for the can of spinach, gets a can of onions by mistake, and everybody's bawling, and Sweepy laughs at that.
Right.
Now, as a kid, I hated that because Popeye didn't get Bluto's comeuppance. But as an adult, I appreciate it.
I actually like that cartoon. I've seen all these cartoons over the years. I mean, and I remember that particular cartoon where basically it's basically the end is Sweepy's laughing. and yeah, no, really, I like the cartoon, but you know,
yeah, I mean that, but that's what I do remember as a child watching the black and white cartoons that you never knew what was going to happen. And I have to say this: if you watch the early famous studio cartoons, in a lot of them, Popeye was the patsy. He was taken down by a woodpecker, Shorty, a hungry goat. I mean, in the first couple of years of the black and white famous studio cartoons, it was rare when you saw Popeye pull out a can of spinach and actually win.
Right. Wow.
They just varied the formula. I think since they had just gotten the series from Fleischer, they were probably just testing the waters to see what worked. That's another cartoon, A Hungry Goat. I hated that as a kid because the goat was the victor. But as an adult, I can appreciate the humor in it and what they were trying to do, especially the scene where the little kid's watching Popeye and the goat on the movie screen and says, "Why don't Popeye eat a spinach and suck him one?"
Yeah, exactly. Jack Mercer was the voice of Popeye, and you had
he succeeded Bill Costello, right?
Okay, but he's the one that we really know as Popeye, correct? And then you got Jackson Beck, right? He was the voice
of Pluto,
and then Mae Questel, who people who might be listening this, Mae Questel is actually in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation,
right?
Mm-hmm. And so she is basically, I think, the aunt in that picture, and she's the one that basically gives the gift of a cat in a box. You know,
she was also Aunt Bluebell, heaviest role you can buy, honey.
there you go. So yeah, I think
and she was the voice of Betty Boop.
She is, absolutely. So yeah, but when Popeye talked, was there any funny business going on under his breath there?
Because sometimes
dirty, but that was one of the uniqueness of the Fleischer cartoons is the fact you could hear the voice, you could hear the muttering and no lips were moving. And that was part of the charm. Not only Popeye, but Olive Oil and Bluto.
Right.
And Jack Mercer always said that if he had the opportunity to squeeze in a line once he saw the animation, he would do it. And that's a lot of the charm of those cartoons.
That's right. Those cartoons were done in Manhattan.
Well, the initial ones, and then they moved the studio to Miami.
Well, that was later. That was when they were doing the Gulliver's Travels picture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But basically, it was Manhattan during the 20s. They were doing the Coco the Clown.
Well, as far as the Popeyes were concerned, it was from 1933, I'm going to say, to like 38, and then 38 to 42, it was Miami.
Right. And then they were kaput. After Paramount,
then the famous studios moved the studio back to New York.
Right. Now, they made three Popeye cartoons, which were specials.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what was the motivation for that? Was it just that people were clamoring for more Popeye?
I think that they were. I think they were clamoring for longer Popeye cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Paramount knew they had a successful character on their hands, and so they pushed him into color. My only regret about the Popeye series is that I wish it had been done in color, and then we could have avoided all those cartoons that were colorized by Ted Turner in the 80s.
Right.
Those travesties that I have to say to you, I see this on emails, and it really, really is discouraging to me, saying that I never understood what was so great about the Fleischer cartoons when I watched those colored Popeyes, and I would have to explain to them,
right,
go get the black and white DVDs, so that's not the original.
Black and white is beautiful. It's beautiful to look
at. I mean, I love them in black and white. Like I said, my only regret is that they did them in black and white so they didn't have to be colorized years later. Because, during the 70s, some programmer came up with the idea, color is better. So the black and white Popeye cartoons, not right away, but they slowly faded from TV.
Right.
Then you had the black and white episodes of Gilligan's Island, Genie, Bewitched. They all disappeared. Mm-hmm. And, everything was just color, which is ludicrous because the Three Stooges stayed on the air and they were in black and white. And the same with I Love Lucy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, they've tried to colorize those things. Even the Dick Van Dyke Show, they colorized.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know.
I think it was just a way of just keeping the thing marketable. And I think in their head...
Yes, and I wouldn't have any complaints about it had they not been redrawn in Korea. If they had done it by computer.
Right.
But, you know, they did the same thing with the Betty Boops in the 60s. They had them redrawn.
And they're horrible.
And not all the cells were redrawn. They had these ludicrous colors. The voice tracks went out of sync. And the three-dimensional qualities in a lot of the Fleischer cartoons, the backgrounds were just gone.
I know. I know the reason why they did it, but they were done so poorly. And, you know, it's funny, the cells from that, I don't know, they're out there. And people think that they're the real stuff. They think they're the real stuff, and it's basically they traced it off of movie film. They projected it onto a not a moviola, but a device basically to trace the lines and repaint it in color. And they had it all painted overseas. So there was no attention to detail.
No, I mean, a lot of times in the Popeye cartoons, you would hear the toot toot of the pipe at the end, but they wouldn't bother to redraw the animation.
Which is crazy. Because
that infuriated me. How many more minutes was it going to take for them to put in his mouth movements and have the smoke come out of the pipe? They just totally ignored it.
Totally ignored it, yeah.
Yep.
And they could have reused it, you know?
Yep.
But they didn't.
Nope.
Anyway, we won't go into that travesty.
Thank you, Ted Turner.
So those three, I'm just going back to those three specials that they did.
Yep.
There's one of Sinbad the Sailor, which seems to be like, that's the one I see all the time.
Yeah.
And at the time, they were basically, Fleischer was doing their own kind of development. You know, Disney was trying to do things to make the cartoons more believable. And Max Fleischer had his own thing with a rotating turntable that had the set of, you know, the background, and they would have the cells in front of it, and it gave this three-dimensional feel.
Yes, fantastic. Holds up to this day.
Yeah, while Disney was doing multiplane with flat artwork, Max Fleischer was actually trying to make it dimensional, which actually worked great when you look at those cartoons. Yeah.
Yep. Also in Alibaba, there's a scene where Popeye's walking through a cave where all the jewels and diamonds, and that was done that same way. Fantastic.
Wow. So after they did those three specials, they were done they did one every year, I think. I don't think they did them all in a row, did they?
Alibaba, and then in 1939 they did Aladdin, and then that was it.
Wow. So when they moved, when they picked up the studio and they moved to Florida, they were in Manhattan on Broadway. And I don't even know if the building still exists there, but when they moved to Florida, I guess that building still exists. And Jerry Beck went down there and he took pictures. I think it's now like a school. It's like a high school now. And but they did their Gulliver's Travels down there. And I guess they were continuing doing some shorts. And
yeah, they tried. I mean, they did like a caveman series, and that's where they started the Superman series. And Popeye lost the urban look, the New York gritty look,
right?
And he just became, I guess, I mean, the cartoons are still good, don't get me wrong, but they lost, in my opinion, that uniqueness,
right?
And they became more sedated. The scripts were still funny, the animation was still good, but you know, in my opinion, they just lost again the uniqueness,
right? At the beginning of the cartoon, they would have it looked like a warehouse that would be by the water. And basically, the doors would open up, and then it would.
You know, when I was a kid, I always thought it was a barn door.
Yeah.
And then I looked at it, and I saw the water. And a friend of mine said, "You idiot! Those are ship doors. It's on a ship."
I knew it was like something by the water, but that it was kind of weird that those doors would open up. You'd have a credit, and then they would close and clap, and then open up again, reveal another.
But you remember it. That's the great thing about it. Weird or not, you remember it. It sticks out in your mind.
Oh, absolutely. It was a totally different type of title. You know, normally they would have, you know, the title card would come on, and it would be an obvious card, you know, and a painted card or whatever. But this was something, it was almost like a three-dimensional thing.
Yeah.
And was it a three-dimensional thing at the beginning?
I don't think it was. I think it was flat, but still, it was original. And the fact that Popeye was a sailor, to have it on a boat, was certainly keeping in character. You know, another thing I want to mention, getting back to the colorization, in the first cartoon that they colorized, the ship was opened, but they didn't close. But you heard the as it was closing, but they didn't close.
Oh my God!
And that was the first cartoon I watched in color, and I just said to myself, "Oh, gee, we're in for a fun ride with these."
That's right. When did they stop the original title sequence? Because it went on for years like that, right? I mean, during the 30s.
In 1939, they briefly stopped it.
Right.
They had like an anchor. One of the cartoons, I don't know if you remember the cartoon, Ghosts is the Bunk is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I'm trying to think another one that may come to my head. Oh, What a Nightmare. I mean, that didn't have the ship doors opening. There really weren't too many. Then they went back to the ship doors, and then they started with the Popeye's pipe tooting, and then you saw a close-up of his face, and the theme had more like of an upbeat tempo. It had more like a, pardon my singing.
That's right.
And that's what they ended with.
Right.
Well, you know, in the early Fleischer cartoons, the ones where Bill Costello was doing the voice of Popeye, mm-hmm. if you look at the characters, they never stopped moving.
Oh, yeah.
They always were moving. There's one cartoon that stands out in my mind called Season's Greetings. That's a Christmas cartoon.
Yes.
Where he teaches Olive Oil how to skate and Bluto's going after Olive Oil. If you watch that cartoon, they never stop moving.
Wow. That's interesting. Must have been taxing for some of the animators over there.
I guess, but there again, it also brought a uniqueness to the films and made them quite memorable. That's the fact that we're still talking about them today. I have to tell you a story. I remember it was the early 2000s,
right.
And I was sitting on the couch with my mother, and we're watching The Popeye Show, which is the anthology series that ran the Black and Whites Restored for the first time. And I remember turning to my mother saying, "Ma, this is the year 2000, and here we are watching a 1933 black and white cartoon at 9:30 at night." That, to me, it just said, wow, these cartoons have sustained, and they have such longevity. You really can't say that about any other black and white cartoon series.
No, you can. And it, you know, it's kind of interesting because something that's good will always be good.
Yeah.
That's why I feel. So, you know, the fact that they have stood up and they stood the test of time.
Yeah.
You know, how many, there are features that were done in the 70s that aren't run anymore. People have, you know, they're antiquated. They're just not, they don't hold up.
Yeah.
And so for something from almost 100 years ago, you know, we're talking between 80 and 90 years ago, to still be good.
Well, you know, I have to say this. King Features Syndicate has a YouTube channel, and they put all the King Features' own cartoons on there, the ones from the 60s and the one from Hanna-Barbera, from the all-new Popeye Hour.
Right.
And they can put up a King Features cartoon on at 6 in the morning and maybe get like 3 hits. And then as the day goes by, they'll be up to maybe like 2,000-3,000 hits on one cartoon. I always check that out, and I'm amazed how many people can watch one cartoon from the 60s. They just all gravitate, good or bad, they all just gravitate.
They gravitate to it, yeah.
Yep.
So when they moved the studio back, when basically, I guess 1942, they did the feature film, was it Hoppity Goes to Town? So
yeah, I think 41.
41.
Either 41 or 42, but it was the early 40s.
Okay, so this picture came out. I think it's a better feature than Gulliver's Travels.
Mm-hmm.
Gulliver's Travels used to run in New York. It was basically, you know, on the Channel 11 station. They used to run it.
Right.
And, you know, every year they'd run around Thanksgiving or Christmas, right? That was kind of like that. That was our daytime entertainment for around the holidays. And eventually they stopped running it because I guess people stopped watching it. But Hoppity Goes to Town, the second and last Fleischer feature, is actually, I think, a much better movie. And I think, but the picture didn't do well. I don't know if it was released at the time of World War II, at the beginning of World War II, and it just did nothing. It was a disappointment. At that time, I guess Paramount decided, because they were having problems with the Fleischers, apparently. I guess Dave Fleischer, who directed a lot of these movies, and Max, who was the head of the studio, they were having some problems between the two of them. Do you know exactly what happened there?
No, other than the fact that they didn't get along.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's been mentioned in books. I would suggest anyone get a book that's come out on the Fleischer Studios, that probably the nitty gritty is there, but it just might be, again, one of those situations that, unless you happen to be sitting there at the time and overheard what was going on, you may never know what was going on. But the fact that the two couldn't work with each other, I'm sure, played a major part in the fact that Paramount just throwing up their hands.
Just firing them both.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was Paramount Studio, it was Fleischer Studio, but I think because of the agreement that they had with them, that I don't know if they just assumed ownership or just said, we're just taking the place over.
And I think that was it. They were able to assume ownership. And, you know, the initial Popeye cartoons under Famous Studios, I would say the first 5 years or so, they're not bad. They're very innovative. They're very clever. I mean, I can think of titles like Puppet Love, where Bluto makes a marionette of Popeye, and Popeye in Rocket to Mars when he has to fight, you know, a Bluto-like Martian and his troop. I mean, they were very colorful, very innovative. The stories were different. I would say it was probably around 1950, 51 or so, where they just started churning out the Popeye, Olive, Bluto romance angle. And there again, you know, they were extremely successful. So the attitude might have been, if it's not broken, let's not try to fix it.
Exactly.
If they're making money and this is what people want to see, not that I agree with that. I agree, you know, every once in a while you got to shake up the mix a little bit, but that just might have been the mentality.
Right.
You know, they're making money. This is the script that's working, so let's just keep doing it that way. The right. One thing I will say about the King Features cartoons, they used many more characters from the comic strip, obviously because King Features was behind it and they syndicated the comic strip.
Sure.
So we got to see Roughhouse. We got to see King Blozo, the Sea Hag, you know, Alice the Goon. We got to see all these different characters from the comic strip, and that made the scripts have much more variety.
Right. Well, in the 60s, when they were using it, I guess I'm going back to the 40s now. During the 40s with Popeye, it was just basically the three characters with maybe a Sweepy.
Well, they had Sweepy from the comic strip. They had Poop Dick Pappy.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Jeep. They used him in a couple of cartoons. They had the Goons. They used them in one cartoon.
Right.
Of course, Wimpy showed up in a lot of the Fleischer cartoons.
Oh, yeah, with the hamburger.
But from what I've been told, I believe that for Paramount to use the characters from the comic strip, they had to pay a licensing fee, which maybe Famous Studios just didn't want to do. If you look at the Famous Studio cartoons that feature Sweepy, mm-hmm. who they called Cousin Sweepy, he just looked like a generic baby out of a Famous Studios cartoon.
Right.
He really didn't look like Sweepy, which was probably their way to get around paying a licensing fee.
Right. Wow. That's stuff like that happens.
Yep. Yeah,
and that's
they probably could care less because the films are making money. So let's just have this baby and call him Sweepy.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. I know they were popular in the 40s, 50s. Were these things ever nominated for an Academy Award?
Sinbad was.
Mm-hmm. Did it win?
It lost out to Disney's Three Little Pigs. But I like to think that Popeye got his revenge years later. Not only because he bested Mickey Mouse in popularity polls in the 30s, but when the cartoons premiered on television, if they ran up against the Mickey Mouse Club, they just creamed them.
Wow. Interesting. Mickey Mouse Club did very well the first year, but I think...
It did. Yeah. But I mean, I go to a newspaper archive site, and I ran across an article, and I think it was WPIX, as a matter of fact.
Right.
That said, you know, their Popeye cartoons, you know, are wiping out the competition, including the Mickey Mouse Club, which made me smile.
I believe it, because WPIX in New York, you know, Popeye was very, very popular.
Right. There's actually a trade a trade ad in my new book where it talks about how WPIX, after 12 years in 1969, rested Popeye, and then when they put him back, he won his time slot all over again.
Wow, just exploded.
Yep, yep.
Just exploded.
And this is 1969, after being on the air since 1956.
Right.
And it was the theatrical cartoons, you know, with the majority of them being in black and white. You know, what people, as I mentioned before, you know, it's kind of like, I would say, I Love Lucy. People don't realize how popular that show was and when into syndication. The same thing with Popeye. People don't grasp how big those cartoons were when they first went into syndication on television. And their success launched the 1960s cartoons, because King Features Syndicate wasn't making any money from the success of theatricals were having on television. So they said, we want a piece of the pie. So they contacted Al Brodax, and he hired six different studios to crank out 220 cartoons between 1960 and early 1962. And that's why, if you watch these series as a whole, they look schizophrenic.
Well, you had a bunch of different studios working on it. You had Gene Deitch.
Yeah, you did. I mean, you had Larry Harmon, who did Bozo. You had Gerald Ray, who did King Leonardo. You had Gene Deitch, who did Tom and Jerry. You had Paramount, of course. And then you had Jack Kinney. And Jack Kinney, I was told his studio had 1 week to crank out a Popeye cartoon, and they did the most. They did 100.
Wow. They were basically using ex-Disney staffers, because Jack Kinney.
You know, I have to tell you, because a lot of the Jack Kinney ones were so poorly done.
Yeah.
I wrote to Al Brodax, and I asked him, why did you hire this guy? I was quite blunt. I said, why did you hire him? I said, a lot of his cartoons are so poorly done. And he said to me exactly what you said. He was a well-respected, you know, Disney animator.
He was.
And I have to say this for those who are listening and who are interested in my book, and I really hammer this down in my book, not all of the Jack Kinneys are poorly done. This, you have to see who the name of the animation director is. One of them, Hugh Fraser, who worked on Dumbo and a lot of classic Disney pictures. But his Popeye cartoons, for the most part, are very poorly animated and rushed. I tell anyone, if you don't believe me, watch Popeye and the Giant, and you'll see what I mean. It is so poorly done. But there again, he has other animators who worked on his cartoons that are excellent. I can't find any flaws with them. It all depended upon the experience of working with limited animation that these ex-Disney animators had. And some had it more than others.
Yeah, the problem with people that are used to doing full animation. So this is just to give you a little groundwork here. Disney, if you work for Disney, basically footage wasn't the key here. The amount of drawings, the amount of work you did was not that important, as long as you were delivering a good quality scene. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, and the difference between that and limited animation is, limited animation, you have to kind of deliver the scene, making it work as fast as you possibly can and still communicating the point of the scene.
Yep.
So when you have somebody come from that whole environment where you have a week or 2 weeks to animate one scene, and now you're going into this environment where you have to produce many scenes in 1 week, the thinking is totally different. And it's some of those guys could not really adapt too well to that, you know?
Exactly.
On the flip side, if you're an experienced animator, you know where you can save. You know where you can take economy, you know, mm-hmm. with the drawings. Mm-hmm. But some people were just not that skilled at doing it, you know.
And I have to say this. When I was 5 years old and I watched these bad cartoons, to me it was just more Popeye. I didn't notice a Popeye's pipe kept disappearing and reappearing in the same scene. I didn't notice it. When I was 17 years old, then I started noticing it. And I was like, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm counting like 12 already that really are bad. And then yet, right. from Jack Kinney Studios, I would count another 20 that were very good. And as I said, I just got used to seeing who was the animation director, that I would know how abysmal a cartoon was going to be. And as much as I loved Popeye, when I got older, when I saw that name, I just changed the channel. I said, I'm not going to sit through this.
I'm not going to torture myself.
I'm not going to torture myself. And I make that plain in my book, because unfortunately, the ones that are bad are so bad, the critics tend to taint the whole series as being bad. And that's not true. You have to watch each individual cartoon and make an assessment on each individual episode. You just can't say they're all bad, because there are many of them that are very, very good.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple of different things here, and I think you might know the answer. I know you know the answer for the 60s Popeyes, because you've been involved with six different books on Popeye. So, mm-hmm. Do you know what the budgets were? What the average budget of a Popeye cartoon was in the 30s, and then the 40s, 50s?
The financial stuff, I don't know, but
right.
I think you can tell just by the quality, you can guess.
Yes. Well, I think the Popeye cartoons that were being done in the 60s were budgeted somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe $10,000 to $11,000 a
piece. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah, which was a lot more money than what Hanna-Barbera was playing with. I think Hanna-Barbera mm-hmm. was doing these cartoons.
Actually, Al Brodak said that the ones that were done in Europe, he sent them there because they had more fluid animation and actually had more animation on less of a budget than in America.
Right. But even here, with Hanna-Barbera doing pretty much a six-minute cartoon for around $6,000-$7,000,
yeah,
which would equate probably to about $100,000 today. I don't know.
I think the series would have been better served if Paramount was able to do more, if they had kind of switched it and had Paramount do the 100, I think. But, you know, they were involved with the theatrical cartoons at that time, so they probably just took what they were able to handle, right, rather than give Kinney 100.
Right.
But, you know, and then Gene Deitch, he did a lot of ones that had simplified animation, but the stories were quite good. And then he also did ones where the animation wasn't simplified. They actually moved, you know, quite a bit. There again, it went to the experienced personnel that were available at the time working on the cartoons and what they were able to bring to it.
Right. The Popeye theatricals finished up in 1956. That was basically
1957. Well, yeah, 1957 was the last released cartoon, Spooky Swabs, and the year before they debuted it on television.
Okay, and so those things were basically dumped onto TV. They're selling these cartoons.
Yeah, they were selling it at a good price too.
Yeah,
I mean they weren't so cheaply by any means. But there again, I don't think anyone had expected how big they were going to be, or they probably would have asked for a heck of a lot more money initially.
So these things came out on TV, and they were huge ratings grabbers, mm-hmm. right? And yep. And the thing that I remember was the big AAP,
Associated Artists Productions.
That's right. And so all the original
beginning and end.
Right. Was that on all the 40s cartoons? Because
yeah, it was done on all the Fleischers and the Famous Studios, I think, except for the last 2 years of the Famous Studios
mm-hmm.
that was still in theaters. They had the original Paramount opening and logo. And I think there was like an occasional cartoon that was released without the AAP. I think the one was Protect the Weakerest. I remember seeing that on Uncle Gus.
Right.
And I saw the Paramount Mountain, and I said, what's this?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, one kind of like sneaked out without the TV syndicator. You know, it's funny, as an adult now, I kind of miss seeing that AAP logo, because I grew up with it.
Right.
And whenever I saw that and I heard the music, my heart would just flutter a little bit.
Sure.
You know, and I know MeTV still runs a bunch of them with the AAP logo at the beginning of the end, because they haven't been released on DVD yet.
Right.
But pretty much all the theatricals have the Paramount opening and closing. But it's funny, you know, as a kid you take it for granted, as an adult you miss it.
Oh, exactly. But basically all these shorts, and it was Warner Brothers took all their pre-1947 shorts.
Yeah, same thing, yeah.
And they were purchased by this company, and then mm-hmm. they put these new titles on there, which was
yep. –
Associated Artist Productions. It just said AAP, and then right. it had a bunch of characters around the the frame. And it was Bugs Bunny, and it was Popeye, or it was or it was Little Lulu or something like that, you know.
Well, Little Lulu was NTA.
Oh, NTA. Okay. So what else was it?
That was Betty Boop.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. So what were the other characters around there? Because it was Looney Tunes mixed with Popeye and what else?
I know Betty Boop, Little Lulu, Little Audrey.
Right.
The Paramount cartoons that I think were like non-Casper related, like the falling, bouncing the ball stuff.
Right.
I think that was also NTA also.
Right. Wow.
And well, then, you know, and then I think they had a few made-for-TV cartoons that came out around that time too.
Wow.
But it was just the rating success of the Popeye cartoons. It just kind of like swept the country.
Right.
I mean, I'll tell you how popular they were. When they came up with coloring books, the logo on the top said TV's most popular cartoon star. Now, you really don't see that on any other cartoon character. I've never seen that on Mickey Mouse. I've never seen it on Bugs Bunny.
Right.
But on Popeye, you had it on coloring books, and you had on 45 records and record albums, TV's most popular cartoon star.
Absolutely. So in when these things were released, there was popularity, massive popularity for these cartoons, and they're run all the time, morning, afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And basically King Features was getting squat because I think all they got was the licensing fee.
Right. Well, I mean, they made thousands and thousands of dollars on licensing. I mean, so they didn't necessarily make squat on that, but they made squat on the popularity of the films being on TV, of course.
Right. Yep. They got nothing for that.
No.
And they were cleaning up. They were cleaning up on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much the beginning of the decision to take these characters, not just Popeye, but other characters as well. Snuffy Smith, that was a comic strip character. And what were some of the other
characters? Crazy Cat, Eagle Bailey, and they came after Popeye's.
Right. So, but the Popeyes were first. So how
And they didn't do, and those three didn't do as well.
Right.
I think they had high hopes for them, but as popular as Snuffy Smith and Beetle Bailey were as comic strip characters, they really didn't translate that well into animated cartoons. I mean, I think they had a following, but they certainly weren't the massive success that the TV Popeyes were. This is another thing I have to bring up.
Right.
Despite the quality on these TV Popeyes, again, they made lots of money for King Features Syndicate, lots of money for the stations that ran them, and also, you know, just gave another boost to the licensing.
Right. Well, hey, it's good to have the licensing.
Yeah.
It's very good to have the licensing. So they produced these things, and they had the six different units, and basically these things – they were produced very, very cheaply. I mean, like I said, a little bit more money than the Hanna-Barbera cartoons at the time. Maybe not as much as the Flintstones, but they did very, very well. And I remember watching Snuffy Smith and Beetle Bailey and liking those
cartoons.
Yeah, they're
good cartoons. I enjoy them. I mean, I have no problem with them. I actually enjoy them.
Yeah.
But they just didn't make the same amount of money that Popeye did.
And basically, they were just syndicated to local stations all around the country.
Yeah, starting in 1960, before they were even finished with them, whatever was done, they started syndicating them to independent stations. And the stations either ran them as an individual series on their own, or they just mixed them with the theatricals.
Now, here in New York, we had, I think he was a, I want to say he was a station manager, but I don't know the history about him. We had, he called himself Captain Jack McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had the Popeye show. And so I think they were running every single Popeye from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something interesting. This is actually what started my writing career on Popeye. I ran across a little booklet, and it just happened to say that over the course of 32 years, 454 Popeye films had been produced. And I said to myself, wow, that's a massive amount. That's record-breaking. How come this isn't out there? And there were things printed about his comic strip career, but I said, this is a milestone. This is a major achievement. More than Mickey Mouse, more than Bugs Bunny, more than Daffy Duck. I said, why isn't this out there? So I started writing articles about his film career. Initially, it was kind of bumpy getting him into magazines because, you know, it was a cartoon character. But I got my first article published in a magazine called Hollywood Then and Now. And after that, it just kind of nicely steamrolled after that. were more and more magazines and newspapers, no internet at that time, were publishing articles on Popeye's successful film career, to the point where King Features was using my information in their publicity, which I had no problem with. My only thinking was, why weren't you doing this before I came along?
Absolutely. So was Seeger passed away before this?
38.
Yeah.
Young.
So basically, how old was he?
44. 43 or 44. Most sources say 44.
So did he see any of that money? Did he see anything?
Oh, yeah. He saw, you know, the initial success with Popeye in the comic strip and in the animated cartoons and the licensing. Oh, yeah, he was doing very, very well.
But who did he own it, or was it King Features?
No, King Features Syndicate.
Wow. That's crazy. I wonder if the family is actually
seeing it. Who knew how the contracts were signed back then? I remember reading that his wife took King Features to court and won, and then I remember reading that King Features took her to court and won it back. So I really don't know how that was resolved. But, I mean, I guess it all depends how you signed the contract at that time. If you didn't have a good lawyer, then you were screwed.
Yeah, but sometimes it's not about the lawyer. It's about how much money you have, because it can
keep bringing it back
to court, you know?
I think today comic strip creators are more aware of taking hold of their properties and not leaving you in the hands of somebody else, but not so much in the 30s, I would imagine.
How'd you get the book going for the 60s cartoons?
I'll tell you what happened. Because of COVID, I was laid off. I had already started it about 2 years before, and the only thing I had to finish was the episode guide. So I said, I'm home. All these cartoons are on YouTube. I'm going to finish this baby. So I literally spent 2 months getting up every morning about 9 o'clock, going to YouTube and watching every single cartoon and writing a synopsis of the plot and looking for the mistakes in the animation and spelling out what was good and what was bad and anything that was unusual. For instance, there's one cartoon called County Fair, where Popeye and Brutus are competing with each other. It's a Paramount 1961. It's excellent. And Brutus and Popeye in a spinach eating contest. And Brutus decides he's going to eat Popeye's spinach rather than his own, and he looks right at the camera and says, you didn't think I was going to play fair with that runt and take a chance against his spinach. So he breaks the fourth wall. So it's something like that, you know, I had to include in the episode synopsis.
Who directed?
That's what it was.
Who directed that cartoon?
Paramount Cartoon Studios.
There you go. Well, you know, they created it.
I mean, it wasn't easy doing the episodes. I mean, after a while, I was like, oh, my God. 150, how many more do I have to do?
Oh, my God.
220.
Just a quick aside. Were you happy with any of the post-King Features cartoons with
Popeye? I enjoyed the all-new Popeye Hour there again. People complain the lack of violence, but I think the script's made up for it. Mm-hmm. And it was also a smashing success on CBS. It ran for 5 years. It was the all-new Popeye Hour. Then it became the Popeye and Olive comedy show. It was also successful in syndication. Popeye and Son, I can't stand, because Popeye was married to Olive Oil, and he had a son named Junior who didn't look like either one. It was just another Hanna-Barbera attempt of taking a classic character and updating it, like Yo Yogi. And, you know, when you had the old material still running on the air, and then you had to watch this.
Yeah, I agree. Did they do all three of those shows?
Hanna-Barbera did the all-new Popeye Hour, Popeye and Olive comedy show, and then they did Popeye and Son. I also have to mention 1972, The Man Who Hated Laughter, a Hal Seeger production, where Popeye and Olive Oil and all the King Features comic strip characters at the time were kidnapped by a mad professor who wanted to rid the world of laughter.
Oh, my God.
Jack Mercer was back as the voice of Popeye and Wimpy.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he lasted for a long time. When did Jack Mercer pass away?
1984. Wow. The last thing he did was a Popeye Nintendo commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And the last commercial, and this is on YouTube if anyone wants to look it up. The last time he worked with Mae Questel, and I believe Jackson Beck, was on a Nintendo commercial for a Popeye arcade game.
Oh, wow. Well,
and it's on YouTube.
Interesting. We got to check that out. Have they pulled all the King Features cartoons off of YouTube because I tried looking for that one cartoon, Barbecue for Two.
They're on YouTube. They're all, there's a site called, I think it's called the Official Popeye Page or something like that. But if you type in the title of a King Features cartoon, they are all still on YouTube.
Well, I went
everything is there.
I actually went looking for it the other day because I wanted somebody to watch it. And I found maybe a 2-minute version. It was an abridged version. And then
it's there. Just keep looking a little bit harder. I just saw it the other night. It's there.
It's there. Okay. So they're all on there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they'd be crazy to pull those because, you know, I have to give King Features a lot of credit. You know, when we had these independent stations come along in the 1990s that pulled a Popeye and the Flintstones and Mighty Mouse and Woody Woodpecker in favor of Maury Povich and Jerry Springer and all that stuff, you know, YouTube just became the other avenue for them.
Right.
You know.
Wow. Hmm.
And that's where Popeye, I mean, he's still on MeTV. They run him every Saturday mornings with the Pink Panther, and he's on that Tune In With Me show. You know, they include him maybe like 2 or 3 times a week. So he's back on television. But when the independent stations just kind of said goodbye to them, you know, the internet picked all the stuff up.
How's it doing on MeTV?
That Tune In With Me is doing extremely well, extremely well. I think they were very surprised because it's, you know, reminiscent of the old adult-hosted shows where you have the cartoon curator and his talking fish puppet, you know, very reminiscent of what we grew up with as kids.
Right. Oh, that's good.
The only thing that annoyed me initially is because the emphasis was on Bugs Bunny and Warner Brothers, and they were running Fleischer, and they were running MGM, and Tom and Jerry, and Droopy. And I'm like, you know, why don't you guys just rename it Bugs Bunny and Bells? But
right.
Because people started, you know, getting at them about that, they recently ran an hour devoted to the Fleischers, and they are taking the time to mention more, you know, of the other characters. You see, that's the tricky part when you run a show where you have a bunch of different cartoon characters rather than just focusing on one. You really can't show favoritism because you're going to get people upset.
Exactly.
You've got to make everyone equal territory.
As I was growing up, I just, you know, I really loved the Disney cartoons later on. And I wanted to work for Disney. But I never forgot my love for the other stuff, you know, like the Popeye and all that. And Bugs Bunny and Tom and Jerry. Cause, you know, it's all great. It's all great. And you take inspirations from all that stuff. There was Yogi Bear.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, what you had just said, going back to the Popeye show, when the Cartoon Network premiered that, it was such a classy half hour. They ran the cartoons restored, and they also talked about the history of the cartoons, like the Fleischers and the innovations.
Right.
Because the Cartoon Network didn't own the licensing rights to Popeye, they put it on at 1:30 in the morning. And that didn't sit well with me, so I spent my own money to place ads in film magazines to have the audience email the PR department at the Cartoon Network asking that the show be moved earlier. And about a month later, they moved the show to 9:30 and then to 7:30. So instead of 13 weeks, it ran for 3 years.
Wow.
So this, my message to the audience is be polite, be nice, and you may get what you want, but you have to be vigilant. That's the only way that show lasted for 3 years. It's also the only way those Fleischers were finally released on DVD.
Right. Well, yeah, but you were the man behind it.
Yeah. Still, but you know, you can't go, you know, bang your fist down on a keyboard and put in swear words or whatever. You just have to say, you know, why aren't these out? Can you please put them out? The president at the time of King Features Syndicate, he wasn't a fan of mine because of the DVD issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had people contact their public relations department. Warner Brothers, who owned them, wanted to release them. King Features, for whatever reason, didn't want to make a deal with them. They were just dragging their feet for like 30-odd years.
Right.
And I said to them, you go to Warner Brothers, you ask them. You go to King Features, you ask them. And it got to the point where they were getting just so many emails. They had to do something, or at least explain publicly why they weren't doing something.
You know, it's really kind of stupid because you have this character. You own the character. And the fact is, by not having it out there, by not having
it, you're
hurting yourself because you could be cleaning up on the licensing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, you know what
happened? The first set sold very well. The second two didn't sell as well because by the time they finished up with the first set, the black and white cartoons that were restored from the Popeye show or whatever film prints were available were showing up on YouTube. So why do you want to spend $45 on a DVD set when you can watch it for free at home? And there again, I blame King Features because their timing was off. Where were you guys 30 years ago with VHS?
Exactly.
But I have to say this, in all fairness, they have a new crew at King Features now. Very nice people, and they are allowing Warner Brothers to release them when Warner Brothers wants to release them. So they haven't stopped them at all. They're working on new Popeye projects, you know, new figures, you know, getting them involved with different ecological projects. So they're a very, very nice bunch.
Phenomenal. The book, Popeye the Sailor, and it's the 1960s cartoons by Fred Graninetti. Go out, get it. Where is it available?
It's available on Amazon and I think Walmart and Google, or, you know, but I would go primarily. Also, Bear Manor Media, they have their own website who publishes the book. They also have some excellent film and television books. So anybody who's interested in film, TV personalities, or cartoon characters in general, I'd suggest that they check out their website. A lot of great stuff.
Fred, are there any of the books that you've done that are still in print?
I believe the Jack Mercer book that I did for Bear Manor Media is still out. And for McFarlane, it's Popeye and Illustrated Cultural History. I believe that's still available. And one of these days, I got to get around to updating that because I've just, you know, you write a book and then you discover, whoops, I should have said that.
Yeah.
Or I should have made this date instead of that date. And this is why I enjoy writing articles on the internet much better than doing books, because I can always go back and say, can you delete this and change it to that?
There you go. You can edit. You can't edit,
and they can edit on the web.
You can't edit print.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had on Mark Arnold, and he said he wrote a book on the Total TV cartoons, and he said that somebody was gone. They were dead. And they were still alive. So you had to deal with that. But anyway.
Yeah, I have a couple of legacy issues on that, too.
Jeez. Anyway, Fred, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
I'd like to do this again, maybe talk a little bit more about Popeye in the future. And,
sure.
That'd be great.
Well, next year he celebrates his 90th anniversary as an animated cartoon character, next July. And I'm trying to work on some press for that. So if you'd like to pop on the phone with me around that time, that would be great.
Oh, that'd be great. You know, maybe a big push for a Popeye balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day
Parade.
Yeah,
that would be nice.
Wouldn't it?
We only had one years ago, and an olive oil one, too. So why not bring him back?
Yeah, why not bring him back for that?
Yeah.
You know, 90 years. It's amazing. He's an old man. But
he's got vitality.
there you go. Still very entertaining. Fred, thank you for coming on. And,
oh, no problem. I enjoyed it.
Do you have any questions or comments about the podcast? Please email Brian at cartoonerific.com. Your email may be featured in one of our future shows.
Well, blow me down.
Hey, thank you, Fred, for coming on the show, and we're going to look out for your book. Should be a lot of fun. Actually, I'm all hyped up to look at a Popeye cartoon right about now. How about you? Yeah, let's do that. Well, that's just about it for us. Next week, we have a very, very special guest. It is the writer and director of a little film called The Brave Little Toaster. His name is Mr. Jerry Reese. He's a multi-talented artist and animator and director. And so he's going to be on next week, and it's looking forward to that. Anyway, if you really like what you're listening to, please subscribe. If you really like what you're listening to, please tell a friend. That's very important here at the Cartoonerific Studio Complex on Long Island, New York. Anyway, I want everybody to have a great day. I want you to have an excellent week, and we'll see you all next time. Once again, thank you for tuning in.
This has been a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
The Cartoonerific podcast is copyright 2024 by Cartoonerific Studios Incorporated. All rights reserved.